Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday, October 3rd. We've got 41 degrees currently in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
All right. Hey, good morning, Leslie. Yeah, chilly start up in Park City this morning. After a gorgeous weekend, though, we're expecting a pretty easy forecast this week as well. More sunshine this afternoon, as we're seeing this morning, 67 degrees for the high today. A gradual warm up throughout midweek into the end of the week. Should see upper 60s near 70 degrees. So really not a whole lot to talk about, just gorgeous fall weather continuing up for the Wasatch back. About 66 tomorrow, 69 on Wednesday, 70 by Thursday. Overnight lows remain in the low 40s as well through the end of the week. For the weekend, looks like we might start to see a little bit of moisture return Saturday and Sunday. For now, still calling for temperatures in the upper 60s. Overnight lows in the low 40s as well. Enjoy your Monday. Leslie, okay. Back to you.
Thanks, Nate. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Caitlin Bognowski. She is the National Ability Center Senior Development and Events Manager. She'll have details about the Saluting Our Heroes event. And Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez will be in with an update on some of the law enforcement issues, including an award the Sheriff's Department picked up last week. Park City Economic Programs Manager Jenny Dearson discussing the public surveys that closed today regarding the Park Silly Sunday Market and Kimball Arts Festival. You can fill those out by going online to engageparkcity.org. And taking a look at some local news now, Park City traveled to Brighton this past weekend to take on the Bengals in their homecoming game. KPCW's Mitchell Elliott has the details.
The 6-1 Park City Miners hit the road this past weekend as they traveled to the Salt Lake Valley to take on the evenly matched 6-1 Bengals. This game would be a huge deciding factor for the leader of the 5A Division 6 standings. The game started fast as Brighton turned a simple run up the middle into a breakaway 63-yard touchdown on the first play of the game. Park City calmly responded with a carefully crafted offensive drive of their own, capped off by a 4-yard Mason Grover touchdown. This back-and-forth scoring would continue through the majority of the first half until the Miners started to build a lead on a couple of big plays. The first big play came from Mason Grover as he broke off a huge 79-yard run to set up a QB sneak touchdown. On the Miners' next drive, they successfully completed a flea flicker play to Jeremy Elridge to cushion the lead even more. The score at the end of the half was Miners 33, Brighton 17. In the second half, the Bengals made some effective defensive adjustments and completely shut out Park City. Brighton responded methodically with back-to-back touchdowns and successful two-point conversions, tying the game at 33 apiece. With 6 minutes left in the fourth, Park City wide receiver Miles Preston fumbled the ball, giving the Bengals excellent field position. That blunder would turn into a Bengals touchdown, making the score 40-33 with 4 minutes remaining in the game. The Miners proceeded to stall out again on offense and yielded another touchdown to the Bengals. The final score of the game was 47-33 in favor of Brighton. With that, the Miners will drop to 6-2 on the season and will look to close out their season strong with a win at home against the Skyline Eagles next Friday. Coverage starts at 7 p.m. right here on KPCW. Elsewhere in the Wasatch back, the North Summit Braves took on the Gunnison Valley Bulldogs at home. North Summit started the game off slow, going down 13-6 at half. In the third quarter, however, the Braves pieced together two big scoring drives to gain a 22-13 lead over the Bulldogs. The Braves managed to hold on and win this game 22-19. With that, the Braves will pick up their third win of the season. North Summit will take on the Milford Tigers next week on the road and will look to keep the wins coming. Moving on to South Summit, the Wildcats continued their perfect season with a blowout win over the 0-7 American Leadership Eagles. The Wildcats scored 7 touchdowns in the first half and easily coasted to a 55-0 victory. Next week, the Wildcats will take on the Judge Bulldogs. Finally, the Wasatch Wasps welcomed the Spanish Fork Dons to Heber for a big matchup after last week's close loss to Springfield. The Wasps went down early, similar to last week, but this time, the Wasps were unable to dig themselves out of the early 27-0 deficit. The final score on the night was Wasatch 20, Spanish Fork 56. With that, the Wasps will drop to 3-6 on the season and will look to bounce back against the Provo Bulldogs next week. For KPCW, I'm Mitchell Elliott.
A recent Park City High School graduate is one of the first to receive a scholarship sponsored by former President Barack Obama. As KPCW's Ben Lasseter reports, she'll use it to continue down a path of supporting refugees.
Mary Herner grew up in Heber City and graduated from Park City High in 2020. Now she's a junior studying public policy at Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. She spent much of last year in an internship helping young refugees from around the world in the Utica area.
We go on like group visits to like the museum in town or like the zoo or like dance classes, just like to get people to know one another. And I really enjoy doing that.
At the end of the school year, Herner applied for the brand new Voyager Scholarship, also known as the Obama-Chesky Scholarship for Public Service. Named for Obama and Airbnb co-founder Brian Chesky, it's geared toward young leaders who can bridge divides and help solve our biggest challenges. When she applied last summer, Herner referenced her internship as well as how she would use the scholarship to go into the world and serve. She says she was surprised to find out a day before going back to school this fall that she was one of 100 selected.
I really think it's like life-changing because it's just like this opportunity to pick whatever you want to do next summer and have the funding to that and have like the support of the Obama Foundation. Like they set you up with coaches to kind of like really hone in on having a meaningful experience next summer. So I'm really looking forward to that and whatever else will come after it. And beyond that, it's, yeah, like having those connections and like getting to know some really cool people through the program.
In November, she says one of the first installments of the program will take her to New York City to meet other scholarship recipients, Obama, Chesky, and other world leaders. In the application, she touched on her French background. She says she'd like to use the language in her future work. While in high school, she won a statewide recognition as World Languages Sterling Scholar. It's now her minor in college. The French connection includes her mother, Carrie Herner, a teacher better known to Treasure Mountain Junior High students as Madame Herner. The family enjoyed several stints of living in France. As one of the first winners of the scholarship, she says it's a reminder to students to be ambitious.
This is definitely not something that I thought I would get. Like, I've definitely been rejected from things I've applied for before. Like, that's part of life. But, like, if you apply for some of these things, you'll get something. I've been interested in, like, community service work since I was in high school. And, like, I never really knew where to go with it. But just kind of, like, jumping at opportunities that seemed to fit my interests really led me to where I am today. So, like, follow what you're interested in.
For more on the Voyager Scholarship, visit the web version of this report on kpcw.org. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
The National Ability Center once again hosting their annual Saluting Our Heroes Luncheon, as well as the Field of Flags display to honor our military service members and veterans for Veterans Day. In the studio with details, I have Caitlin Bogmowski. She is the Senior Development and Events Manager for the National Ability Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you're doing things a bit different this year. You're going to usually do this in Salt Lake City, but you're staying up here?
Correct. Yeah, so we figured we have a brand new building on our campus, brand new in 2020, called The Hub, that can seat about 300 people for a seated lunch. And so we thought it'd be a great opportunity to get more people up to our campus and be able to see the facilities and the programs we have to offer, as well as keep our costs down a little bit. It is a fundraiser, so we wanted more of that money raised to go to the military participants and programs.
Okay, so when and where is this happening?
It'll be October 20th at 12:30 p.m. Right over at our campus, which is in that Round Valley area. And so we do have a VIP reception just prior to that, starting at 11:15.
Okay, so who's invited?
Anybody is invited. So registration is open to anyone, civilian, military. We're excited to have a bunch of different people in the room.
Yeah, who usually shows up?
We do normally have a good combo. We have a lot of active duty, a lot of veterans, as well as some of our corporate partners, some of our individual donors. So it's a great combo in the room.
Yeah. How much are tickets?
Tickets this year are $60 for an individual or $30 if someone is a service member or veteran.
Nice. Okay. And those are available where?
They are available online, so they can go to our website, which is discovernac.org. And then if you scroll down to the Saluting Our Heroes link, follow that to the registration page.
Okay. Lots of parking then for folks?
Yes. Yeah, we're lucky to have two brand new parking lots, so plenty of parking available.
Okay. And interesting, the keynote speaker, you've got General Martin Dempsey, former Joint Chiefs of Staff. How did you score that?
We do. He's actually my dad. So I reeled him in with a promise to get some time with his grandkids. No, but he believes very strongly in our mission as well. So he was excited to come out and speak at that event.
That's awesome. So tell me, any idea what he's going to speak about?
He is talking with our participant speaker. We will have a participant speaker like we've always had in the past as well. And so we're kind of trying to marry those two speeches together. And I know that Frank, who's our participant speaker, is going to talk a lot about just the family that is the NAC and how his organization that he runs to support veterans with PTSD has really found a home at the National Ability Center and wouldn't be able to do what they do for veterans without us. So I think they're going to try to tie those messages together.
Yeah. And as somebody who's kind of grown up in the military, would you travel a lot?
I did, yes. Yep. Grew up in the military and then was in the military myself as well as my husband. So long line of it. And it was actually what initially drew me to the National Ability Center was what we're able to do for the military population.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, why does the NAC do this?
Yeah, I mean, this is actually what we started as. You know, we supported veterans coming back from Vietnam with a ski program up at Park City Mountain when it was much smaller than it is today. So it's really embedded in our roots. And now it's about 30% of who we serve. And today, really, a lot of the veterans that come to us, it is a lot more of that PTSD, combat stress. And it's amazing to see what outdoor recreation and the camaraderie that they build with other veterans at the NAC can do for them.
Yeah. So what are some of the programs that you offer veterans in?
So we offer over 20 different programs, and all of those are available to our military population. But then in addition to that, we do also have overnight camps and retreats that are specific for military. And so they'll come to our campus for 3 to 5 days. And that's, like I said, really great because they're also with other veterans. It's typically a group of about 10 to 12. And so not only are they getting the benefits of the outdoor recreation, but they're also getting the benefits of being around people who have that shared experience.
Yeah. So you have the facilities. I mean, who's paying, though, for those folks to be there?
Yes. Yeah, some groups we partner with, like Wounded Warrior Project or Team Semper Fi, and they'll pay. But then we also have a pretty large VA grant, and that pays for a lot of those internal VA camps. And so that those are open to any veteran, but we do the recruiting and all of the planning for those.
Okay. And then tell us about the Field of Flags, because that doesn't happen until next month.
Correct. Yes. That will be right around the week of Veterans Day, like it typically is. And so that's, we place over 100 American flags right at the Miners Hospital in City Park. So it really is a beautiful display. Last year when we were not able to do our luncheon, we did a ceremony over there and it was really, really amazing. This year we will not have the ceremony, but we certainly welcome people to go over and walk among the flags and think about any veterans or service members that they may have in their family or friends.
Okay. And they go up and stay up for
They'll go up the Monday before Veterans Day and they'll come down the Monday following Veterans Day.
Okay. So a couple of weeks then.
Yeah.
Okay. No tickets needed then. People can just show up and enjoy the flags.
Correct.
Okay. Let's see. Again, people can go online to discovernac.org to purchase a ticket for the luncheon?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. What's the latest with the Mountain Center? We had a groundbreaking earlier this year.
We did, yes. We had our groundbreaking ceremony, which was very exciting. As you know, it's been a long time coming, so we were excited about that. And yeah, they're over there working. They will be working through the winter. So we thank everyone for their patience with that going on. That Mountain Center is going to be a huge, huge improvement for our participants in that program. So,
yeah. When do you hope to have that open?
You know, I am always hesitant to make that guess with construction. I think initially they were hoping for the 23-24 ski season, but looking like maybe the ski season after that. So I know Michi White, our founder, is spearheading that effort. And so we're very thankful for all of her efforts.
Okay. Anything else you want to let us know what's going on?
I think just we are at a little bit of a limited capacity this year for saluting our heroes relative to when it was down at the Grand America. We can seat about 300 versus about 600 in the Grand America. So just encourage people to get online and purchase those tickets now if they are interested in attending.
Okay. Caitlin, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Well, the Department of Wildlife Resources is investigating a couple of bull elk carcasses recently discovered by a Summit County resident. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more about that.
KPCW received graphic photos of two beheaded elk suggesting a possible poaching incident. The carcasses were left to waste in the East Canyon area behind the Jeremy Ranch golf course. It's illegal to kill wild game out of season and to leave the meat behind. Chad Bettridge is a Department of Wildlife Resources captain and works in the law enforcement division. He spoke with KPCW Wednesday and said he didn't know about the incident. He said leaving animals to waste is a felony. If caught, the perpetrators could end up in jail and receive fines for restitution for the value of the animals.
So in a situation like that where somebody goes out and literally just takes an animal for the antlers or something like that, and the meat goes to waste and stuff like that, That's as serious as it gets in the wildlife world.
Multiple landowners live in the East Canyon area and some run ranching operations there. Bettridge also reminded residents not to confront any suspected poachers as situations can be emotional and possibly escalate. He urged people to call the UTIP hotline at 800-662-3337 if they suspect poaching somewhere. DWR spokeswoman Faith Jolly said an investigation is underway and KPCW will update the story as more information becomes available. Photos of the animals can be found in the web version of this report. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, in the last year, a book and a film have come out about the Colorado resort town Crested Butte and how its community stood up to a corporate mining company. The author and the filmmaker will be in Park City today for a free screening as part of a discussion on community activism. The film High Country and book titled The Town That Said Hell No both feature longtime Park City resident and founder of Leadership Park City, Miles Radiman, who is also the former town planner of Crested Butte. Radiman says that while the stories are focused on Crested Butte, Wasatch Back residents will recognize the players because every town has those kind of characters. Author Paul Anderson now calls Aspen home, but he lived in Crested Butte and worked as a reporter for the Gunnison Country Times and Crested Butte Chronicle. He was there in 1977 when the AMAX Mine Company announced it would be building a mine in the mountains of Crested Butte. The community, Anderson responded and said, hell no, we don't want it.
The town put up a huge front, which was amazing for a small, eclectic, and really often dysfunctional community to rally its citizenry together and really form an effective cohort out of a rabble. When I saw that happen and the transformation that that town went through, the political affirmation of democratic principles, really, of self-determination and autonomy for a small community against a huge external force, I saw that as a real lesson, I think, for America and the world to recognize the importance of self-determination for a community.
Filmmaker Connor Hagen was born in Crested Butte but moved to New Mexico at a young age. Crested Butte became a second home for his family and a place that he's always returned to.
To me, it's just one of the most magnificent, unique, and beautiful places on earth. And I just think that there's just a really strong community there. There was something that was happening back then in the 70s, and I think it was very unique, the sense of camaraderie in the community and this sort of shared sense of environmental stewardship. I found the stories that I heard coming out of that era in Crested Butte fascinating, and I wasn't hearing stories about anywhere else.
The hour-long film focuses on Crested Butte's history as it grew into a premier resort destination. Both Anderson and Hagen interviewed Radiman for their projects. Anderson says Radiman was pivotal in the town's success fighting the mine company.
Miles was an incredible coalescing force in Crested Butte. I consider him kind of a Svengali. He wove a myth. He created a persona for the town in a very creative, innovative, imaginative way, and really understood the community and its values.
Hagen added that Radiman's participation in his film was critical.
Miles really was the single person who was looking ahead down the road into the future and trying to make decisions, responsible decisions for the town's future, and implementing those policies to, you know, just to basically coalesce the community and try and do the best that the town could to protect and preserve the natural environment. He was really leading the pack, it seemed like, and he was a visionary, I'd say, back then.
Hagen, Anderson, and Radiman will all be part of a post-film panel tonight. The screening of High Country starts at 7 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. You can find more information linked to the web version of this report at kpcw.org. Well, the Summit County Sheriff's Department was honored on Friday, and in the studio with details, I have Sheriff Justin Martinez. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us about the award.
So the award is the Bill Daniels Fund of Ethics and Leadership through the University of Utah David Eccles School of Business.
So who was Bill Daniels?
Bill Daniels is a pioneer in the cable industry and used to be the owner of the Utah Stars, I believe. He just big in business, and he believed in ethics and leadership. And because of that, it earned him a reputation of somebody you wanted to go work for, and among other business leaders, somebody that you could respect and trust. And because of that, he started this fund and wanted to recognize individual or groups for their ethics and leadership. The category is comprised of three different categories: business, nonprofit, and government. And within those categories are, you know, exemplifying leadership and ethics. And so we submitted an application, excuse me, and we were a finalist, but we didn't know if we'd won or not. So we went to the awards ceremony last Friday, and there was numerous applications that put in across all three disciplines. And it came down for the government, us, the Summit County Sheriff's Office, and Salt Lake County as a whole. They had instituted some innovative programs within Salt Lake County. And at the end of the day, the Summit County Sheriff's Office won the award for ethics and leadership through the Daniels Fund through the University of Utah School of Business.
Well, congratulations. Besides bragging rights, anything come with it?
No, a really big a big plaque, a glass award, which is really nice, but it takes a team to lift this thing up. But, you know, Leslie, the real award obviously goes to the deputies at Summit County. A lot of people put the emphasis on the sheriff. But this is a team effort. And what I really am proud about because of this award, it was an outside entity. You know, a lot of times people get awards from organizations within, sheriff to sheriff, chief to sheriff, whichever it may be, within your own group of people that you work with. This was an outside governing board that looked at what we've done at the sheriff's office, what we did in particular with the Connor Jack case, and how we handled that. I think a lot of people, a lot of agencies could have taken that situation and made it worse. I mean, it happened in Las Vegas where he got arrested. To recall, Connor Jack was a missing autistic boy from California that went missing about 3 years ago when he was a child. He'd been missing, and he turned up here in Summit County and as an adult. He had a run-in with law enforcement in Las Vegas. They arrested him, tased him, handcuffed him, and put him in jail. They eventually released him. He was just wandering the streets, made his way to Summit County, and through compassion, empathy, and working with him, I mean, it could have been easy, I guess, to say, we could have rolled him up, put him in the back of a patrol vehicle, taken him down to Salt Lake City to a shelter, and just out of sight, out of mind. But because of the ethics and leadership and integrity, they were able to discover that he was a missing child from California 3 years prior and return him to his family.
So do we know how that kind of ended other than him returning to his family?
So the last we heard, he was actually receiving therapy at the Utah State Hospital. When we found him, he gave us enough information that we were able to identify him, but we don't know to the extent of what he encountered in his 3-year journey. We have reports that he may have been all the way into Florida. We haven't been able to confirm this, but if his journey took him, whether he was transported there or however he got there, we have reports he might have ended up in Florida. We do know that he ended up in Vegas because that's where he was arrested and then made his way to Utah.
Yeah, was he abused in any, do we know? I mean,
we don't know. We can only speculate. But, you know, whatever his journey was quite harrowing, to say the least.
Yeah, so was he lost? Do we know that? I mean, did he... make it 3 years without kind of knowing what you're doing. Huh?
Yeah, and so that was the really interesting part, is that he had the mental wherewithal to let us know that he was not breaking the law. He was not a danger to himself. He seemed to have, you know, was eating, had shelter, was just sort of, for lack of better words, homeless, wandering from state to state. But, you know, and we'd had run-ins with him weeks prior, and we tried to provide him with shelter, tried to provide him food, tried to help him any way we could, and he never took us up on it, but we never had anything to arrest him on. I guess we could have made up a vagrant case, but that wasn't what we do. And so we'd had interactions, and for lack of better words, they were good interactions. Well, the morning that this really came to a head was... It was a really cold morning. He was sleeping in front of the Jeremy store. He was literally shivering when deputies arrived, and they invited him to sit in their vehicle, warm up. And in the past, he never took us up on any offer that we'd provided for him. I think because of the past interactions that were good, he took us up on that offer. He warmed up. And because of that, we were able to start having a dialogue with him and determine that there was more of a humanitarian cause here. And because of that, we were able to determine and find out that he was a missing child out of California. And so through all that, that was the main piece of the award we received, in addition just to the general way we do business at the sheriff's office. So it was quite an award that, you know, I'm very proud of, and I'm very proud of for the deputies that I get to work alongside with.
All right. Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Moving on, last week the sheriff's office reported a fraud complaint. This was a woman who says she met a man on Instagram who deals with cryptocurrency. Over several months, she transferred about $250,000 to invest through an app called CoinCastle. But when she actually tried to take out some of the earnings, she was told she'd have to pay a $25,000-$30,000 broker fee. Any updates on this?
No, that right now is being turned over to the federal government. That is out of our jurisdiction. But what I will say on this, we don't want to. We could use this to illustrate, to warn your listeners. Anybody that calls you, you meet anybody that they're asking for money, and we have a lot of people that are calling the elderly saying that, hey, I'm so-and-so with the Summit County Sheriff's Office. Your son is in jail. We need you to transfer some money. Anytime anybody ever asks under any conditions, whether it's through Instagram, you've met them, somebody calls up and cold calls and says that there's a need, that you've got a warrant for your arrest. You didn't serve a jury duty during COVID. I mean, there's some scams out there. Anytime anybody asks for money over the phone, it's probably a scam. That's a very safe bet to make. Even if you've met somebody through Instagram, having them ask you for money is typically not how business people operate. In addition to that, I would say if anybody has any question, anybody does make a request, call the sheriff's office. We'll investigate it right there and then. But it's better to do that and be safe beforehand than be out $250,000.
So is she out $250,000?
She is.
I mean, it was sent overseas, huh? Mm-hmm. Or whatever.
As of right now, it appears that she will be out that $250,000.
Okay.
And that's the biggest amount that I've seen. I've seen it a couple thousand, a couple hundred. I think up until recent, the most I'd seen is something around $12,000, which is still a good chunk of money. But this one, $250,000 is quite a lot. So that's something that we have to bring in the federal agencies to help us with.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's right. Tell them you think about it and you'll call them back and get a phone number.
Absolutely. Get a phone number. Call us. Let us look into it further. Let us help you out. That's what we're here. I'd rather do that than have to take a report of this matter. I mean, that's life savings. That's life changing, right?
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, it's that time of year again when we start hearing about housing scams for our J-1 workers. Any that you're aware of?
I'm not. Is there something that
you... No, it's just one of those things that, you know, and I did see some posts on social media from J-1s. I think they're getting a little bit savvy, saying, are there some locals who could help check out the contract I have for the house?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, again, this goes back to the society sometimes really is frustrating, that people are always looking to take advantage. They're looking to take advantage of workers that are willing to come here, that want to be part of this community, that are willing to help, and they're getting taken advantage of. So yeah, anything we can do to help that, anybody has any questions or concerns, contact the sheriff's office. If it's here in Park City, contact the Park City Police Department. Let us do what we can to help ensure that what you're doing is in your best interest.
Yeah, and again, that's what they've done. They've posted, you know, and they had several people say, hey, I'll go look, right? Make sure that the address is...
For real.
In fact, right? And that it is for rent and not somebody else living there. Yeah. Okay. So many e-bikes get stolen. What kind of luck, if any, do you have getting them back?
You know, it's a mixed bag of when we get those back. And I think the biggest thing is... Know your serial number, know your model number. If you have a picture of it, and I'm assuming you're talking personal e-bikes, are you talking the ones, okay. Yeah, have a picture of it, your serial number, your model number, And in the off chance it does get stolen, you know, we then have some information to go on. But if we don't have that information, it's harder for us to recover that bicycle. We can do the pawn shop list, see if people try to pawn those vehicle or bikes. They're on KSL.com quite often that we have recovered them. Sometimes we recover them almost immediately, and sometimes we never recover them at all. So it's really a mixed bag, but do anything you can to help us out. In addition to that, you know, we try to provide an environment here in Summit County as a sheriff's office and Park City Police Department that's safe. And I think that people sometimes just, for whatever reason, whatever it may be, you're getting groceries, you forget to lock your garage door, but take the extra time, lock that garage door, close the door, don't become a victim of opportunity. And I think that's what a lot of these crimes are opportunity crimes.
So mostly garage doors open?
Correct.
We don't have people actually breaking into garages, because
no.
I've heard about that too, right?
That's very rare in the sense that, you know, you're creating noise. You're making noise if there's a dog. You don't want to draw attention to yourself. But if you leave a garage door open, it's easy really to run in, grab the bike, and literally within 10 seconds, you're in and out there, and you now have a bike that's worth somewhere up of $12,000.
Yeah, right. I know Park City Police Department offers a licensing, bike licensing program. Does the Sheriff's Office?
We used to, and we just didn't have a lot of response. I still believe we have the capabilities, but we haven't really advertised it, because when we did, I think we had something like 4 people show up and get it licensed. So, you know, it really wasn't worth it. And that was years ago. So we still have the capabilities, but no, at this time, we don't have an active program.
Okay. Hey, we're also reporting on a couple of elk carcasses where they were just, rack taken, bodies left to rot. I know that that's being investigated by the Division of Wildlife Resources, but does the Sheriff's Office get involved in any of that if it happens in Summit County?
Not necessarily. I mean, we might take the initial report, but that is a Division of Natural Resources report to take. For example, if there's an accident on the freeway, that's Highway Patrol's jurisdiction. We may be the first on scene, but when a highway patrolman arrives, we'll turn over jurisdiction to them. We support each other across all of the different agencies, but no, we would not ever really take the lead on an investigation like that. That is their responsibility.
Okay. Anything else going on you want to let us know?
Nope. Leslie, I really appreciate the time.
Okay. See you next month.
Thanks.
Thank you. Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez. Well, it's the 50th anniversary of the Park City Ski Swap, and like last year, organizers are requiring timed entry reservations, which are now available online. No special celebration is planned for the Ski Swap's golden anniversary, but to be first in line for this year's sale that happens that first full weekend of November, that's the 4th through the 6th, bargain hunters can register online now. Park City Ski and Snowboard Executive Director Christy Hines says the timed entry system worked well for them last year.
Folks can start to buy tickets, $15 on Friday night, $10 on Saturday, and I think $5 on Sunday, and that's parkcityskiswap.com. You can go on and do your reservations.
Now is the time to start cleaning out your garage and closets. Presale drop-offs will be collected at both Jan's and Cole Sport on Park Avenue, October 31st through November 3rd from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Equipment more than 5 years old is not accepted, nor are used helmets or goggles. You can find the registration link and the online version of this report at kpcw.org. Well, the Park City contracts for the Park City Sunday Market and Park City Kimball Arts Festival have expired, and today is the final day to take these two surveys that the city is conducting. In the studio with details, I have the city's economic program manager, Jenny Dursk. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how do residents take the survey?
So the best way to take the survey is to go on to engageparkcity.org, and both surveys are there. They're available in English and Spanish, and each survey should take roughly 5 minutes. They were actually really easy and quick to do, so we're just asking kind of last shot here, anyone who hasn't gone on, please go on and take the time to do that and get those surveys in for us. I wanted to mention we've had about 2,000 people take the Silly Market survey. About 70% of those are local Park City and Summit County residents. We've had about 500 people take the Kimball Art Center survey. So really, if I can push, just go back on and take that Kimball Art Center survey. It'll help us when we get to council later on to make some decisions about what to do.
All right. So you are taking, anybody can fill the survey out as opposed to those who just live here?
Yeah, so anyone can take the survey. One of the first questions on the survey is about where you live and some of your demographics. So that'll help us kind of narrow down some of the information when we bring it back. But we did want to make it open to anyone to take the survey.
Yeah, what else do you want to know?
You know, we really just want to hear people's sentiment. There's questions in there about what they like about either event. There's questions in there about what needs to be improved. There's a question in there that's about, you know, do people want to see the events return to Main Street? And, you know, if people feel like there's other comments they want to share, too, that maybe they can't get out in the survey, then the way they can submit those comments, we're also asking for people to submit those today, is to council_mail@parkcity.org. And then if you choose, you can copy me at my email, and that's jenny.dearson@parkcity.org. We've had a ton of comments coming into both council mail as well as my email as well, and those will be submitted as part of the public record as well.
Okay, so the surveys themselves don't sound like they're open-ended questions, that they're just
correct.
More of a multiple choice or...
Yep, that's
okay.
Correct.
All right. Will public opinion, though, be the deciding factor when the council considers these contract renewals?
I think this is going to be a tough one for the council. It's obviously a hot topic within our community. This is the beginning of a way that we can get back to council and really help show them at least the beginning of the sentiment of the community, and then really hear from the council which direction they want to go on both events. And, we've had lots of comments coming in. Some people want to see the events go away. Some people want them to stay how they are. And other people are giving us really great suggestions on how things might be able to change or ideas for the council to consider in the future. So, for as long as I've worked at the city, which has been about 8 years, the council always really wants to hear people's feedback. They're listening and they want to know. So I can't encourage folks enough to just take the time to either send an email or take the surveys and let us know what you think.
Okay, so what happens after this then? I mean, the deadline closes at 5 p.m. and then you start compiling?
Yeah, so we'll spend the next couple weeks compiling the results of the feedback that we receive. Right now we're tentative on council's agenda on October 27th to go to talk about both events and next steps for those events then.
Okay, and again, those emails then for comments, council_mail@parkcity.org or jenny.dearson@parkcity.org. Okay, anything else you want to mention about the surveys?
No, I think that's it.
All right. You've got some upcoming events this month. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so we have some great local events coming up the month of October. I wanted to remind folks the Scarecrow Festival at McPullen Barn was this past weekend. That's a really fun one if you want to go out there and hike on the trail. There's tons of scarecrows that the community has made. They're different every year, and it's, you know, one of my can't miss in the fall. So make sure you go on that hike out there at the McPullen Barn. This coming Saturday, we have the Prospector Fall Festival from 3 until 7 p.m. That's going to be held over in Prospector on Barrett Lane. There's live music and food and drinks available for purchase. Prospector's done a lot of great things this summer. I think this is their fourth event. They're really doing a lot of outreach within the community, local community, trying to get the community to come over there and support them. So please go over there and do that. It'll be a great thing to do with your families. And then I also wanted to mention this Saturday on Main Street, Peace House is holding an event called Be the Light in their efforts to end domestic violence in our community. There is no road closure on Main Street, and participants will walk on Main Street sidewalks. They are asking for people to register in advance for that event, so please go to peacehouse.org for that. And then also, after a two-year hiatus, next weekend, we have the Shotski returning to Main Street. And I just wanted to mention that tickets are still available for that event. I think they're on Eventbrite. But this is a fundraiser for those of you that don't know. This is a fundraiser by the Sunrise Rotary Club. It raises funds for our local nonprofits. And it's in friendly competition with a neighboring ski town, Breckenridge. And we are in competition to have the biggest shot ski in the world. there's a friendly competition, so really we just need about 1,300 shot takers to break Breckenridge's Breckenridge's record, and I know we're a competitive town, so I'm sure that we can meet that record.
Okay, what do people need to know, though, in terms of that? You've got, we'll close the street because it's a whole long line of people.
Yeah, so we will be closing the street next Saturday. The street closure will occur around 8 a.m. until about 3 p.m., and that is really just between Heber Avenue and the top of Main. Lower Main Street and Heber Avenue will remain open during the event. And then parking is also at normal parking rates, but we do expect parking to fill and for town to be busy that morning on Saturday. So please just make an effort to ride your bikes, your e-bikes, and take transit to the event if you can.
Okay. And we're going to bring back some Halloween to the Bonanza Art Park. This is going to be the first event there this summer then, huh, or fall?
Yeah, so back in the spring, the council asked for some additional programming focused on locals in the arts district. We have four action-packed evenings. They're going to be October 26th and 27th from 4 until 7, and then the 28th and November 1st from 4 until 8. The activities are different nightly, and we're going to have food trucks and kids' activities and music every single of those nights. I know on the November 1st, we're going to be celebrating Dia de los Muertos, and we're really excited to be partnering with several with our Latino population and celebrate that Mexican holiday. And then I also wanted to mention our partners, Kimball Art Center. They're going to have their exhibitions open each night until 6 p.m. with free admission. So if you want to go check out, they have some really cool exhibitions there. You can go check that out, and it's just walking distance right there to come back over the art park and participate in that. And then also Sundance Institute has partnered with Park City Institute and Warren Miller for a double feature at the Ray Theater, also in walking distance, on October 29th. And if people are interested in finding out more information about all of these events, they can go to pcscarts.org. This is a really fun event. It's all about community, low cost, lots of fun things going on.
Okay, and Halloween on Main Street is coming back again on Halloween?
On Halloween, so that's Monday, October 31st. It's traditional time from 3 until 6 after the kiddos get out of school. And there's, you know, road closures expected at 2, and there is paid parking that day. The city will post more information on the city's website by October 24th for that event.
Okay, let's see. Also wanted to let people know about the Fall Project Open House. That's happening tomorrow.
Yeah, so I just wanted to remind folks, the city is hosting a Fall Open House tomorrow night at the library. This is many departments from around the city discussing current programs and projects within the city. And we just really want people to come out and hang out and learn about what we have going on and give us feedback. So please come by from 5 o'clock until 6:30 on the library's patio.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Nope. Park City, we're lucky. Get out there, enjoy the beautiful weather, and we'll see you out there.
Okay. Jenny, thanks. Jenny Dearson is Park City's Economic Programs Manager. Well, Park City Mayor Nan Worrell has recommended longtime resident and private developer Henry Sigg to sit on the city's Planning Commission. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
The mayor's recommendation is subject to approval by the Park City Council. Sigg was chosen from among five candidates interviewed. In his interview with the City Council, Sigg said he thinks Park City is at a turning point.
It's kind of like global warming. The longer you let it go, the more it sort of goes uncontrollably. So there's a lot of large projects on the board right now. There's the Arts District, there's the Iron Horse, there's the two parking lots. Those are mega.
The two parking lots he mentioned are part of the prospective redevelopment of the base areas at both Park City Mountain and Deer Valley Resort. The city has several large-scale projects in the works. It recently started crafting a new plan for the Bonanza Park neighborhood. That area includes the site for the Homestake Affordable Housing Project and the Yarrow Doubletree Hotel, whose owner is proposing to turn it into 250 apartments and condos. Sigg said he thinks taller buildings and workforce housing fit in Bonanza Park. He said his main focus as planning commissioner would be serving as a good steward of the land. Sigg has led local projects in the past, but said to avoid conflicts of interest, he will not pursue any of his own development work within city limits. He owns land in the Silver Creek area by Home Depot and has proposed building a mixed-use project there. That convinced Summit County to amend its neighborhood mixed-use zone. Sigg told KPCW that while he has an application in the works for that project, it is not moving forward right now. He said he has been in complex negotiations with the county lately regarding rights of way in the area, near where the county is building a facility for High Valley Transit. He applied to build a 200-unit multifamily project on the south side of SR 248 above the Tuhay neighborhood in 2019, but ended up selling the land. He also owns property along Highway 32. If appointed by the city council at its meeting on October 6th, Sig would serve on the commission through July 2026. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Several Heber City government bodies met last week for a conversation about how tall the city's skyline should be. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has more about that.
Heber City's population is growing fast. Does it need to grow in height to keep up? That's a question Heber City Planning Commission members asked the City Council during a joint meeting Tuesday, acknowledging the recommendations they make are ultimately up to the Council's votes. In May, the Planning Commission approved a new five-story hotel, taller than any building currently in the county, with the condition that the developer make affordable housing out of 10% of its units. That sparked public backlash, and the Council quickly voted to limit all buildings to three stories for 6 months and to decide what to allow in the future. No decisions were made Tuesday, but the Planning Commission expressed interest in allowing future hotels to build up to five stories in commercial districts downtown. However, they'd likely have to meet conditions like including some affordable housing. Planning Commissioner Dave Richards said both established and prospective businesses are being forced out, especially because their employees can't afford Heber homes. He said allowing large hotels to be built would help the local housing crisis.
I know we don't want to have skyscrapers or anything like that, but economically, if we want someone to invest into what we have, we've got to give them a reason to invest. If you want to see it a certain way, you are going to lose a certain segment of what the economy is there. It's sad to say. I don't have the answer.
Commissioners used the movie theaters and an outdoor apparel company on Main Street as examples of businesses that are on their way out. Some of the council members agreed with the idea of allowing height exceptions for hotels. In May, Mike Johnston was the only council member who voted against the temporary building height restriction. He also cautioned against capping heights to three stories in this week's meeting, saying it would stunt economic growth. Councilmember Ryan Stack supported allowing larger hotels on a case-by-case basis, which would give the city more power to address specific concerns when developers pitch their projects. Councilmember Rachel Kaler said she'd support allowing taller hotels in the tourism hub on the west side of town to incentivize new growth near some of the city's athletic complexes and most popular attractions.
The train hosted over 80,000 people last year. And look at the rodeo grounds. They have a draft horse event this weekend that will pull in people from across the country. There's already people gathering there, and they're having to drive other places to stay the night. We need to really look at the West Side as a tourism opportunity instead of trying to drive everything down to our main street.
Kaler told KPCW she wants any code changes to incentivize developers who build taller than three stories to include affordable housing, parking, or mixed-use areas. Councilmember Yvonne Barney said she supported the idea of taller hotels on the west side of town where visitors are common. But elsewhere, she said she still wanted to limit heights to three stories or a maximum of four in some outlying areas. Councilmember Scott Phillips wasn't at the meeting, but weighed in later in a social media post. He said he wasn't opposed to allowing tall hotels in various locations, especially commercial zones, other than central downtown. The temporary three-story height limit in Heber City expires next month. Kaler said the council is working on creating a downtown steering committee and it wants input from residents and business owners before making any final decisions. For a link to view the discussion in full, visit the web version of this report at kpcw.org. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Well, months after saying goodbye to Chief Ernie Giles, after 24 years of service, Wasatch County now interviewing applicants and could have a new one before the end of the year. Former Fire Chief Giles retired this past April. During his 33-year career as firefighter in chief, Wasatch Fire moved from a volunteer to full-time professional agency and added emergency medical services. Former Deputy Chief Eric Hales has served as interim chief since he stepped down. Now Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh says 16 people have applied to take the reins, including two from within the department. The job listing lists candidates with at least 5 years of experience as a battalion chief or higher rank, as well as a bachelor's degree. It also says applicants should have experience in wildland and urban fires and be willing to live within an hour of driving time from a station or administrative offices. The chief's salary is advertised at $100,000 to $140,000. Graybaugh says he expects a new chief to be named in November, but that no announcements would be made about the hiring process until then. The Wasatch County Fire Board does the selection of the next chief.